So we're getting together. We have created some new energy.
I'm Amy Gastelum. Thanks for listening to Making Contact. As we were finishing up production on today's episode, a feminist movement from South Korea began to gain traction here in the United States. It was a response to the presidential election. It's called 4B. The B stands for the Korean word meaning not. Essentially, women are refusing to participate in four components of patriarchy: marriage, childbearing, dating, and sex with men. This is Korea's latest export. Whatever it takes, y'all. A huge thank you today to producers Skylar Swinson and Ann Noyce Sani. Go to our website, focmedia.org, for more information about today's show. Until next week.
This is MF Grimm. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This feels like home being here. Keep hip hop alive.
It's time to pack your bags and join us for Camp KBOO. Make a summer of memories with KBOO and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give to help us reach our $50,000 goal by June 29th.
Be sure to tune in to Radio Lost and Found. It's the show that puts the OO in KBOO. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour media escape of found sounds, forgotten records, outre recordings, and more. Coming to you every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
When I saw that we were christening the Harvey Milk, Stuart, the example that your uncle set for all Americans, the life he led in the Navy and the life he led afterwards, is surely exemplary. And the Secretary of the Navy needed to be here today.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Queer job rights are threatened by a straight woman's U.S. Supreme Court win, Texas's Don't Say Gay law will ban gay-straight alliances, and the U.S. Navy tries to sink Harvey Milk's memory. Those stories and more this week because you found This Way Out.
I'm David Hunt.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 7th, 2025. A heterosexual Ohio woman has won support for her workplace discrimination claim from the United States Supreme Court, although the ruling does not conclude that there was bias against her because she is straight. The unanimous June 5th decision repudiates the higher standard of evidence that members of majority groups need to provide to prove such cases in half of the federal court circuits in the U.S. For example, they require white workers claiming bias based on their race, or heterosexual employees claiming bias based on their sexual orientation, to present more evidence of bias than minority plaintiffs must show. Marlene Ames is employed by Ohio's Department of Youth Services, its juvenile justice agency. She's charging that in two instances, her straight supervisors passed her over for promotions in favor of less qualified queer candidates. She had previously had a fairly positive performance evaluation from a lesbian supervisor. even in the conservative-leaning 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, Ames had lost based on the higher standard of proof requirement. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wrote for all her colleagues that the High Court's case law makes clear that the standard for proving disparate treatment under Title VII does not vary based on whether or not the plaintiff is a member of a majority group. Congress left no room for courts to impose special requirements on majority group plaintiffs alone. Critics worry that the decision will open the floodgates to members of majority groups claiming job bias because of their identity. It may also weaken workplace protections for LGBTQ employees, flowing from the U.S. Supreme Court's 2020 Bostock decision. The justices then found that queer people are included under the Title VII ban on workplace bias based on sex, among a number of other characteristics. National LGBTQ Task Force Policy Director Alan Morris told The Advocate that the decision underscores the need for congressional action and the prioritization of federal non-discrimination protections for LGBTQ people. Congress must act to pass comprehensive, explicit federal non-discrimination protections, including the Long Overdue Equality Act. As for Ames, her lawyers say she is overjoyed about the opportunity to prove her case in the lower courts.
Puerto Rico's non-binary and gender non-conforming people should be able to revise their birth certificates with an X gender marker. That's the ruling of the U.S. territory's Supreme Court. Transgender people in Puerto Rico have been able to update their binary birth certificates since a federal court ruling in 2018, but there was no non-binary option. Citing the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, the June 2nd High Court decision calls the request of the 6 non-binary plaintiffs simple to be permitted to have a gender marker on their birth certificate that reflects their true gender identity like everyone else. The justices noted that at least 17 U.S. states allow X gender markers on birth certificates. Their 19-page decision concluded, even in the absence of specific statutory language regarding non-binary individuals, courts have interpreted statutes as implying the existence and rights of non-binary people. Puerto Rico Governor Jennifer González Colón says she's waiting for recommendations from the territory's Justice Department about how to best implement the ruling.
A Texas version of Don't Say Gay has galloped through the Republican-dominated state legislature and is expected to be signed by anti-LGBTQ Governor Greg Abbott. The so-called Parents' Bill of Rights prohibits student groups based on sexual orientation or gender identity on all public school campuses. The ban specifically targets the Gay Straight Alliance advocacy groups popular on junior and senior high school campuses. Representative Jeff Leach railed, "We're not going to allow gay clubs, and we're not going to allow straight clubs. We shouldn't be sexualizing our kids in public schools, period. We shouldn't have clubs based on sex." The measure also eliminates diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in Texas schools, claiming that they call for differential treatment based on race. Bisexual Democratic Representative Aaron Zwiener spoke with great feeling about the legislation.
"This is one of the most, maybe the most, nakedly hateful bill we have had on the floor of this House. And here's what I want y'all to know. Getting silence in schools from the LGBTQ community, which is what this bill is designed to do, will not stop your kids from being gay. It will make them afraid to tell you when they figure out that they're LGBTQ. And it might damage your relationship with them forever."
Fellow Democrat Gene Wu also took the floor.
"Every time I think we can't go any lower, I'm always impressed. The real monsters are not kids trying to figure out who they are. The monsters are not the teachers who love them and encourage them and support them. They are not the books that provide them with some amount of comfort and information. The real monsters are in here."
If signed, the law is set to take effect in August or September. Advocacy groups are almost certain to challenge its constitutionality.
Edmund White is dead at the age of 85. The famed gay writer's agent Bill Clegg confirmed his death to The Guardian on June 4th. He said that the writer was waiting for an ambulance after he experienced what his writer husband Michael Carroll described as a vicious stomach bug. He is survived by Carroll and his sister, Margaret Ann. White wrote many groundbreaking novels over the past six decades, including this semi-autobiographical A Boy's Own Story, The Beautiful Room is Empty, and The Farewell Symphony. He also published five memoirs, My Lives, City Boy, Inside a Pearl, My Years in Paris, The Unpublished Vice, and The Loves of My Life. That last one chronicled the thousands of men with whom he claimed to have had sex. Apparently, one of his qualifications for co-authoring the landmark 1977 how-to manual, The Joy of Gay Sex. White was also a long-term HIV/AIDS survivor and helped to found the nonprofit Gay Men's Health Crisis with fellow writer Larry Kramer. White's biography of the French novelist Jean Genet won a Pulitzer Prize in 1994. His biographies of novelist Marcel Proust and poet Arthur Rimbaud are also deemed outstanding. In the words of editor-in-chief Paul Bagley of White's publisher Bloomsbury, the author wrote, "Some of the best and bravest novels, biographies, and memoirs of the last 50 years, many of which will remain classics for generations to come. It is impossible to overstate the importance or influence of his writing in bringing the gay experience to the widest readership and always achieved with wit, elegance, and sexual candor."
Finally, the city of Missoula, Montana, is at odds with the state government about which flags can appropriately be flown over government property and public schools. Republican Governor Greg Gianforte signed a measure passed by the Republican-dominated legislature in mid-May banning any flags that represent a political party, race, sexual orientation, gender, or political ideology. Exceptions were made for the official flags of any county, municipality, special district, or other political subdivision within the state. So, on June 2nd, the Missoula City Council made the LGBTQ pride flag their official city flag. The vote was 9-2. Bill's sponsor, Jennifer Savage, has a queer daughter. In the council member's words, "When I see the pride flag, I breathe a little sigh of relief, and I think, my kid is safe here. The pride flag symbolizes inclusion. When a public school teacher flies it in his or her classroom, it says to the student that has already come out that they are welcome. It symbolizes to the student who may just be coming to understand their sexual or gender identity that the classroom is a safe space." Fourth grade teacher Patrea Torma was one of the educators who spoke out against the Montana flag ban during the Missoula Council's public comment period. He said, "They have seen my flag up in my classroom all year, and last Friday they had to walk in and realize that it's gone." Republican-dominated legislatures in Utah and Idaho have also passed measures specifically banning the display of the LGBTQ rainbow pride flag. Salt Lake City and Boise have in turn designated pride flags as official city flags to skirt the laws. It's unclear whether Confederate flags are exempted from the bans. Montana State Representative Braxton Mitchell is vowing to amend the law he sponsored in order to thwart Missoula's leftist government. He told NBC News that in the next legislative session, he would make sure no city can make a political symbol their official flag. If they want to fly that flag, they can do it at home, not on the taxpayers' poll.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 7th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay healthy.
And I'm David Hunt. Stay safe.
Hi, I'm Cleve Jones, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. An informed community is a strong community.
You Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
The attempted erasure of another piece of LGBTQ history confirms that trying to hide a real hero is the mark of a very petty officer indeed. This Way Out's Lucia Chappelle has the story.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
In the United States of America, I christen thee Harvey Milk. May God bless this ship and all who sail in her.
Gay icon Harvey Milk is being thrown out of the U.S. Navy for being gay again. A fleet replenishment oiler bears the name of the assassinated San Francisco supervisor, but the tide has turned in Washington, and the new administration is ordering Milk's name to be scrubbed from the vessel. Speaker of the House Emerita Nancy Pelosi of California called the action a shameful, vindictive erasure of those who fought to break down barriers for all to chase the American dream. You could say it's reminiscent of an era Milk warned of in a 1978 interview with This Way Out's Greg Gordon.
Prior to Hitler's taking over in the 20s, the gay movement in Germany was more advanced than the gay movement in San Francisco in 1978. Mm-hmm. There was a statewide, nationwide convention of gay people in Germany, 8,000 gay people. We've never had anything like that here. There were letters written to the Reichstag to tell them to throw out the anti-gay laws. Scientists, doctors, everybody was preaching for gayness and acceptability. In Russia, 1917, they threw out the anti-gay laws. And then Stalin took over. And that was the end of the gay movement. Hitler took over at the end of the gay movement. And if you think history doesn't repeat itself, you're crazy.
The USNS Harvey Milk was launched on November 6, 2021 from San Diego, California. Featured speakers at the ceremony were Secretary of the Navy Carlos Del Toro and Milk's nephew Stuart, founder of the Harvey Milk Foundation. Secretary Del Toro praised Milk's character as a model of service.
When I saw that we were christening the Harvey Milk, Stuart, I knew that I needed to be here today. Because the example that your uncle set for all Americans, but the life he led in the Navy and the life he led afterwards is truly exemplary. And the Secretary of the Navy needed to be here today. Not just to amend the wrongs of the past, but to give inspiration to all our LGBTQ community leaders who serve in the Navy in uniform today and in the civilian workforce as well, too, and to tell them that we're committed to them in the future. You know, I travel the country and I travel the world and I talk to our officers and I talk to our enlisted folks. And one of the messages that I always leave with them is be bold, be brave, take care of the people that you lead. Know them, understand them, but more importantly, fight for them. Fight for them. That's what your uncle did. He fought for the people that cared. He made a difference. That's the kind of naval leaders that we need in our officer corps and our enlisted corps and our civilian workforce.
However, Harvey Milk was definitely not the kind of person today's Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth wants in his military. A spokesman for the scandal-plagued former Fox News weekend host said, Secretary Hegseth is committed to ensuring that the names attached to all DOD installations and assets are reflective of the Commander-in-Chief's priorities, our nation's history, and the warrior ethos. Comparing Milk's record in the Navy and Hegseth's public pronouncements, Human Rights Campaign National Press Secretary Brandon Wolf offered his interpretation of the renaming on Joy Reid's Substack show.
So this is someone who
even in the face of that kind of discrimination and hatred, still demonstrated the kind of courage and humility and selflessness that is required to be a service member in the military. So that's one thing, is just what a disgrace to the memory of Harvey Milk, but also how embarrassing for Pete Hegseth. Because to be clear, secure men do not go to great lengths to scrub the names of gay icons off of ships. That is what weak and secure men do.
At the christening ceremony for the USNS Harvey Milk, both Del Toro and Stewart praised former Secretary Ray Mabus, the visionary behind the Navy's John Lewis-class ships.
It's great to see that the man who named this great ship, the 70th Secretary of the Navy, Ray Mabus, is here with us today. You demonstrated great courage as well, too, in naming this class of ship and in naming this very ship after Harvey Milk. So I thank you, Mr. Secretary. I'd love to be able to take credit for that, but you deserve all the credit. So how about a round of applause for our 75th Secretary of the Navy?
I want to thank Secretary Del Toro and Secretary Ray Mabus, whose design and dream to create a John Lewis class that includes not only Uncle Harvey, but in fact, as soon as Uncle Harvey takes off, or I'm calling him Uncle Harvey, as soon as the U.S. Navy ship Harvey takes off, a week later, they will start work on the Robert F. Kennedy in this very same berth. And that will be followed by Sojourner Truth. And it really was a great visionary action that you had taken in putting together that class. Thank you.
The John Lewis class was visionary that day in 2021, but the entire program will now be scrapped. A whole list of naval ships honoring civil rights leaders are in line to be renamed, including the USNS Thurgood Marshall, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Harriet Tubman, Dolores Huerta, Lucy Stone, Cesar Chavez, and Medgar Evers. Stuart Milk's address at the launch of his uncle's namesake stressed the importance of remembering and teaching history, a message that's even more poignant today.
Uncle Harvey did not set out to have a ship, a school, a street, or a park, or anything named after him. He did have a dream, however. The son of a Navy family, both my grandfather Bill and my grandmother Minnie served in the Navy, my grandmother in the auxiliary. Uncle Harvey was really extremely proud to carry on that family tradition, being a commissioned officer. But Uncle Harvey did have a dream. Now, one of those dreams was for service members to serve with authenticity and not be forced to hide who they were or who they loved. Yes, Uncle Harvey was forced to resign, and I would hope that his biography would include that, and there's a reason for that. But he has a less than honorable discharge. He was forced to resign because he was gay. I thank Secretary Mabus, who provided the full DD-214 to the family, which included 2 weeks of interrogation, and I think it's important that we teach that we have evolved as a society, as a culture, that we move forward. But we have to teach our history to prevent ourselves from going backwards and repeating it. And I think it's really critically important. Now, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, when it was taken down in 2011, sent a message that LGB service members could serve with honesty and they could serve openly. It's tolerance. But today we're celebrating something much bigger than tolerance. What we're celebrating today is that the Navy not only recognizes but honors those. So there's a difference between tolerance and celebration. So this Navy ship sends an important message to the world. Secretary Mabus and the Obama White House had asked me about reversing Harvey's dishonorable discharge, which thankfully you can now do if you're a family member I explained that I thought it was important not to do that, to keep the memory of how we did not honor everyone in this very honorable service. Now, let me tell you about the impact that the U.S. Navy ship Harvey Milk already has made. In 2016, Secretary Mabus held a naming ceremony on Treasure Island, and we got hundreds of emails and letters from all over the world that heard about the U.S. Navy ship Harvey Milk. And let me tell you the story about one. We got an email from a young Kuwaiti named Khalil, 15 years old. Now, for those of you who do not know, in Kuwait, it's still illegal to be LGBT. In 70 countries, it's still illegal to be LGBT. And it's still punishable by death in almost a dozen. Now, in Kuwait, they don't even have to have the death penalty because there's a thing called honor killing that goes on today, where families will kill the child who comes out. So Khalil had written to us and said that he had planned his own suicide so that his parents did not have to go through the trouble of killing him. But he heard about the U.S. Navy ship Harvey Milk, and he wrote to us and said, I'm sitting here in the port in Kuwait, waiting for the U.S. Navy ship Harvey Milk to come. I have put aside my plan of suicide, and I think I have a future. And we have continued contact with Khalil. He is safe. He is hopeful. The U.S. Navy ship Harvey Milk has already begun to spread hope and the dream of my uncle around the world.
And the Gay Moon is about the letter I got from Southwest Africa when he read about a gay person getting elected here. And that person has hope.
Let me close, as I often do, about my Uncle Harvey's ultimate will and, yes, his prophecy. He did anticipate his assassination. He didn't know who, he didn't know when, but as Anne would be able to tell you, the death threats were relentless, and it wasn't just because he was openly LGBT, but he was asking people to join him, to take off their masks, and to be authentic. Now, I'm always asked at these events if I am, and the family is sad, that we didn't get to see a day like today, where we have so many wonderful openly LGBT people serving, and not only in the military, but in elected office as mayor and as a cabinet officer, celebrities, role models. And you see, Harvey actually did dream of today. He dreamed of the day that we could take off our masks, that we could be authentic, that we could live openly. You see, that dream of my uncle gave him courage, the courage to keep fighting. He dreamed of each of us, LGBT and ally, all of those that intersect the marginalized and disenfranchised communities who live their authenticity. I firmly believe when those assassin bullets went ripping into my dear uncle, when that final bullet went smashing into his brain, that Harvey left this world seeing all of us fulfilling our potential, being authentic, and making today and our dream and his dream a reality. Thank you all for fulfilling Uncle Harvey's dream. Now I'd like to direct your attention to the Stryker platform. Paula, would you please christen the ship?
After Stuart Milk's remarks, the traditional bottle of champagne was smashed across the bow by Navy veteran Paula Neira, who serves as the clinical program director for the Johns Hopkins Center for Transgender Health.
Name of the United States of America, I christen thee Harvey Milk. May God bless this ship and all who sail in her. Woo!
A statement from Stuart Milk on the news about the USNS Harvey Milk reads in part, Harvey Milk's legacy is certainly enhanced and celebrated by a U.S. naval ship. However, his legacy will not be silenced or diminished by the renaming of that naval ship. Rather, such an action would only serve to prove that Harvey Milk's style hope will continue to endure and inspire across the globe, and that neither bullets nor name stripping can stop Harvey's overriding message to us all when he prophetically anticipated making the ultimate sacrifice. Let the bullets that enter my brain destroy every closet door. You gotta give them hope.
All men are created equal and endowed with certain inalienable rights. And finally, in our national anthem, it says, oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave on the land of the free? And bigots, no matter how hard you try, you cannot erase those words from the Declaration of Independence. No matter how hard you try, No matter how hard you try, you cannot chip those words out from the Statue of Liberty. And no matter how hard you try, you cannot sing the national anthem without the words. That's what America is. Bigots, love it or leave it.
Reporting for This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell.
We've come too far to turn back now. You can twist my words, you can break my stride, but you can't take mine, you can't take my pride.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by David Hunt and Tanya Kane Perry and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Lucia Chappell. Paul McCartney and Wings and Felix John featuring Jay Hart performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Steve Sims of Seattle, Washington, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on Lofty FM, Adelaide Hills, South Australia, WRFN, Nashville, Tennessee, KBRP, Bisbee, Arizona, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
This is Cy Khan. I spend most of my time in North Carolina, but when I'm in the Pacific Northwest, I turn my dial to KBOO music for the rest of us. Oh, yeah.
Lie down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
In his first days in office, President Biden issued a presidential memorandum that specifically centered advancing the human rights of LGBTQI plus people in U.S. foreign policy and development assistance, as well as protecting the rights of LGBTQI plus migrants and refugees. I think it's clear that under the Trump administration, the U.S. is fully abdicating its global leadership on LGBTQI plus rights.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Czech trans woman beats forced sterilization law in Eurocourt. Young bi women fuel Australian queer population explosion. And USAID cuts devastate global queer community. Those stories and more this week now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
And I'm Sarah Montague.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 14th, 2025. The Czech Republic sterilization prerequisite for a transgender or non-binary person seeking to change their legal gender has been condemned by the European Court of Human Rights. The Strasbourg-based court ruled on June 12th that the mandate violates privacy guarantees in Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights. Plaintiff Taylor H. was assigned male at birth but identifies as female. She has fought for more than a decade for the right to change her legal gender and associated personal identification number. Taylor H. first challenged the sterilization requirement in 2012. The case went all the way to the Czech Constitutional Court in 2021, where she lost. the Euro Court of Human Rights offered her a last opportunity to change the law. Meanwhile, the sterilization requirement was struck down by the Czech Constitutional Court last year in a separate case filed by a transgender man. The justices delayed enforcement of the ruling until July 1st of this year to give the government time to replace the law, but the legislature failed to act. Taylor H. called the decision a great day for non-binary and trans people. She said, "It's essential that Europe follows a path of dignity, equality, and human rights, especially amid global efforts to roll back trans rights."
The number of Australians over the age of 15 who openly identify as LGBT+ has mushroomed, according to a new university study. Researchers at the prestigious Charles Darwin University in the country's Northern Territory report that the number grew from 3.3% in 2012 to 5.8% in 2020. Young women who identify as bisexual were the biggest driver of growth over that eight-year period. Researcher Fiona Shalley noted that the increase mirrors the growing social acceptance of queer people, capped by the public vote approving marriage equality in 2017. The upcoming 2026 census will ask a question about sexual orientation for the first time. Those results will provide an even clearer picture of Australia's LGBTQ+ population.
The Southern Baptist Convention has come out in support of the repeal of marriage equality in the U.S. A huge majority of the more than 10,000 voting messengers at the denomination's annual meeting in Dallas, Texas, approved the collection of resolutions in a declaration called Restoring Moral Clarity Through God's Design for Gender, Marriage, and the Family. The June 10th declaration was the Baptists' way of commemorating the 10th anniversary of the Supreme Court's Obergefell marriage equality ruling. They call for the institution to be limited to one man and one woman. They believe that equality laws not only defy God's design for marriage and family, they also undermine what they think is the biological reality that there are only two genders. Moreover, they foster willful childlessness, gender confusion, and the undermining of parental rights. The resolution package also includes calls for bans on pornography and gambling on sports. The Southern Baptist Convention is the largest Protestant denomination in the United States. Delegates to this week's conference represented close to 50,000 churches and some 12.7 million members as of 2024. Their consistent opposition to marriage equality, of course, means that those churches do not solemnize same-gender relationships. President of the denomination's Council on Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, Denny Burke, told the New York Times, "We know that we're in a minority in the culture right now, but we want to be a prophetic minority."
LGBTQ+ community, reflect on our journey and look ahead to the future as we kick off this World Pride Parade and recognize our 50 years of pride here in the nation's capital.
World Pride 2025 climaxed with a joyous June 7th parade and a defiant June 8th International March on Washington for Freedom in the U.S. Capitol. The three preceding weeks of events included parties, exhibitions, workshops, and a three-day human rights conference that attracted more than 800 activists. Hundreds of thousands of celebrants were drawn to the nearly six-hour parade, led by marchers carrying a 1,000-foot rainbow flag. The second of a two-day festival followed the parade, featuring hundreds of people staffing booths ranging from commercial ventures to non-profit organizations. Free concerts during the celebration featured Cynthia Erivo, Dochi, Khalid, David Archuleta, Christine W., Troy Sivan, RuPaul, Kim Petras, Jennifer Lopez, and Renee Rapp. Periodic rain failed to dampen the festivities. Then it was on to the Lincoln Memorial the following day. There were not as many international visitors attending World Pride this year, thanks to the anti-immigrant and anti-queer policies of the Trump administration. Those from the Global South were particularly impacted.
Tel Aviv's LGBTQ Pride was canceled by the authorities on June 13th after Israel launched airstrikes against Iran. The festivities were scheduled to begin that day. A mass protest of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that had been scheduled for the following night was also canceled amid concerns for security. Tel Aviv has hosted one of the region's largest pride celebrations, and up to 250,000 people were expected this year. Highly controversial pro-Trump transgender celebrity Caitlyn Jenner was to have been the guest of honor. This was the second consecutive cancellation of Tel Aviv Pride. Last year's parade was called off by authorities and activists due to the ongoing hostage crisis and war in the Gaza Strip. Jerusalem's annual Pride Parade took place without serious incident on June 5th.
Is Andre Jose Hernandez Romero still alive? 52 U.S. congressional Democrats have demanded proof of life for this renditioned 31-year-old Venezuelan makeup artist. Hernandez Romero had applied for asylum based on threats to his life for being gay in his homeland. Immigration officials detained him based on some of his tattoos in a sweep of alleged members of his country's notorious Trende Agawa gang. His defenders say the tattoos were not in any way gang-related. He is believed to be in the infamous maximum security CECOT prison in El Salvador. A June 9th letter to Secretary of State Marco Rubio was written by now Congress members Robert Garcia, Sarah McBride, Mark Tacano, Becca Balint, and Richie Torres. They asked for a wellness check on Mr. Hernandez Romero and for Secretary Rubio to facilitate his access to legal counsel and immediate release. Garcia told The Advocate, "Pride Month is an opportunity to highlight his story even more. The more folks learn about it, the more they'll put pressure on the administration and Homeland Security to do the right thing." Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has already directly rebuffed Garcia's request for intervention. There's no reason to believe that Secretary Rubio will respond any differently.
Finally, U.S. Air Force veteran Gina Ortiz Jones has become the first out LGBTQ candidate to be elected mayor of San Antonio, Texas. She defeated Trump acolyte and ally of anti-queer Republican Governor Greg Abbott, Rolando Pablos, in a runoff election on June 7th. Jones will become the third female mayor in the nation's seventh largest city. She previously served as Undersecretary of the Air Force during the Biden administration, where she managed a $173 billion budget and led 600,000 people. The victorious Filipino-American promised during her campaign to open early childhood education to more kids and to increase affordable housing and work programs for unskilled workers. Jones told supporters at a victory celebration,
"It was my name on the ballot, but you and I know decency was on the ballot. Kindness was on the ballot. Compassion was on the ballot. And San Antonio showed up and showed out."
Jones will be sworn in on June 18th for a four-year term. She honored one of her volunteers with a promised appointment.
"I want to highlight Brandon because Brandon is from San Antonio, transgender man, drill instructor in your United States Air Force, but unfortunately is getting kicked out because of the executive orders. I'm very proud of the fact that Brandon's going to stay in San Antonio. It's unfortunate that the United States Air Force is not going to benefit from your talents because of bigotry, but Brandon, we'll find a spot for you." Yeah.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 14th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Sarah Montague. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Sorgi Thor, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine heard on over 200 radio stations worldwide, the World Radio Network, and on the World Wide Web. Keep listening.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Reach out and touch somebody's hand. Make this world a better place. If you can, reach out and touch somebody's hand. Make this world a better place.
When the Trump administration gutted the United States Agency for International Development, LGBTQ plus people were robbed of more than 100 programs aimed at advancing their health, safety, and human rights around the world. Notoriously transphobic billionaire Elon Musk wielded the financial chainsaw for his personal goals as much as for President Donald Trump, who's been using his Sharpie to slash LGBTQ plus rights. A few days before the power couple's much-publicized romantic breakup, an impeccable source told This Way Out's David Hunt that the days of U.S. leadership on global queer rights are over.
On June 4th, 2025, the Trump administration asked the U.S. Congress to claw back $9.4 billion in spending that lawmakers had previously approved in the federal budget. Trump said that was the amount of waste, fraud, and abuse uncovered by his biggest campaign donor, Elon Musk, through the so-called Department of Government Efficiency. It's a far cry from the $2 trillion of wasteful spending Musk had promised to find. To keep the president happy, Musk has taken aim at some of Trump's favorite targets: PBS, NPR, and almost every dollar of foreign aid. I'm David Hunt. The government's efforts to dismantle USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, have been extensively documented in the media. The administration's termination of 5,341 foreign aid projects has disrupted global health programs and reduced access to education and health care for millions. Thousands have likely died as a direct result of the sudden cutoff of funding, according to Boston University. Less well documented has been the impact of the funding cuts on programs advancing the health, safety, and empowerment of LGBTQ people around the world. To explore that part of the story, I sat down with Ari Shaw, Senior Fellow and Director of International Programs at the Williams Institute.
The Williams Institute is a think tank based at UCLA School of Law, focused on LGBTQ law and policy. And our goal is to really ensure that evidence and data are brought to bear on policymaking and judicial decision-making that impacts LGBTQ people. For so long, myths and stereotypes have been relied on, and unfortunately, to this day, still in many cases, to generate bad policy and bad laws that impact LGBTQ people.
In a brief published in January, shortly after Trump signed an executive order pausing all foreign aid, Shaw suggested the order was just the first step toward the Trump administration's broader goal of eliminating LGBTQ issues from U.S. foreign policy and development assistance. He was right. A 90-day pause in aid led to the cancellation of thousands of programs, including more than 100 serving LGBTQ people around the world. Among the cuts, $5 million to combat gender-based violence and anti-LGBTQ violence in Honduras, $1.3 million to promote social, economic, and political inclusion for LGBTQ people in North Macedonia, $4 million for a gay men's health initiative in South Africa, $10.5 million for international disaster assistance for organizations led by women, disabled, and LGBTQ people in 24 countries. Those cuts pale compared to the amount of funding pulled from HIV/AIDS programs. The Trump administration canceled $262 million for the joint United Nations program on HIV/AIDS and $238 million for the International AIDS Vaccine Initiative. And it effectively ended President George W. Bush's signature foreign aid initiative, PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, first signed into law in 2003. The countries impacted include some of the poorest in the world, 18 African nations, including Uganda, Burundi, and South Sudan, India, Indonesia, and Nepal in Asia, Guatemala and Nicaragua in Central America, and the Caribbean nations of Jamaica and the Dominican Republic. The impact is, in the words of the New York Times, heartbreaking. Reporting from Kampala, Uganda in March, New York Times reporter Abdi Latif Tahir said, "The rapid loss of aid from the United States has left many gay Ugandans terrified." He reported the conditions for LGBTQ Ugandans is so perilous that shelters often move locations frequently or relocate individuals in order to avoid personal attacks or raids from the authorities. Now, some of those shelters are beginning to close. The situation is much the same for LGBTQ people in other countries, in other parts of the world, according to Ari Shah.
To this day, there are still more than 60 countries that criminalize consensual same-sex activity. I think something like 11 have the death penalty as one of the penalties for individuals who are convicted of under these criminal statutes. In many countries, being transgender or in some way kind of deviating from normative gender identities or gender expressions is criminalized as well.
The Williams Institute has played a key role in helping to advance human rights for LGBTQ people. Until funding was canceled by the Trump administration in January, the Institute participated in two USAID programs in the current fiscal year, a task force providing technical assistance to USAID programs seeking to serve marginalized populations, and the Global Human Rights Initiative, a broad-based effort to advance human rights, democracy, and the rule of law. Through his contacts at those programs, Shah has seen the devastating impact of Trump's funding cuts.
I've certainly had conversations with groups around the world who have lost their funding, that have had to either close their doors entirely or lay off substantial numbers of staff and employees. And these are organizations, again, that are providing, in many cases, life-saving necessary care and services to the community, providing medical services or, you know, shelters for unhoused or other people in really dire circumstances whose lives are at risk now because they are not able to access these services. It's a really dire set of circumstances, and there's a lot of fear and precarity because it's not clear where additional funding would come from. In many cases, even just services that were already performed, that were contracted by the US government through USAID, where organizations, they've already provided the services and are just supposed to be paid or reimbursed for those expenses. They haven't been able to receive those funds. So it really is a kind of life or death scenario for a number of organizations, and as a result, for individuals and communities that are dependent on those organizations for services.
You are listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt, continuing my conversation with Ari Shah, Senior Fellow and Director of International Programs at the Williams Institute at the University of California, Los Angeles School of Law. Foreign aid for LGBTQ programs is a relatively new endeavor. The Biden administration embraced inclusive development practices shortly after Joe Biden's inauguration in January 2021. USAID increased resources for LGBTQ programming from $6 million in 2021 to $25 million in 2024. At this level, USAID was the second largest global donor to activities supporting LGBTQ people in developing countries, Shaw says.
Under President Biden, LGBTI rights were really sort of elevated and centered as a priority within U.S. foreign policy and development assistance. In his first days in office, he issued a presidential memorandum that specifically centered advancing the human rights of LGBTQI plus people in U.S. foreign policy and development assistance, and called on federal agencies to ensure that they were, you know, taking steps to advance these rights, and kind of specifically called out issues around ending so-called conversion therapy practices, efforts to debunked efforts to change sexual orientation or gender identity, as well as protecting the rights of LGBTQI plus migrants and refugees, and sort of broadly decriminalizing consensual same-sex activity around the world.
What Trump and opponents of foreign aid don't appreciate is the importance of soft power to America's standing in the world and to the promotion of its interests.
By taking actions that, you know, support humanitarian assistance or global health or protecting the basic human rights of individuals around the world, the U.S. is able to be seen by local communities as a partner who supports fundamental freedoms, who supports sort of basic needs and services that comes to support local communities after a humanitarian disaster or other complex emergencies that require assistance. And, you know, at a very basic level, that helps people around the world see us as in a benevolent light, in a good light, right? As a strong, supportive partner and not as an adversary.
It's not just the cancellation of foreign aid that's created a crisis for aid recipients around the world. The sudden and chaotic nature of the funding cuts and the unsupported claims of waste, fraud, and abuse took many programs by surprise and left them and their clients struggling to survive.
When the U.S. government deploys that sort of rhetoric and policymaking, it reinforces the stigma and gives permission to leaders and groups that oppose LGBTQ rights to further drive that message and attacks on the community.
Is the damage to America's reputation and moral leadership permanent? It's too soon to tell, but reputations take far longer to build or rebuild than they do to dismantle.
I think it's clear that under the Trump administration, the U.S. is fully abdicating its global leadership on LGBTQI plus rights, you know, not only in terms of the pause or the elimination of foreign aid funding, but also, you know, we see it in the proposed reorganization of the State Department that has been coming out in recent weeks, where programming pertaining to human rights and the rule of law is either being eliminated or you know, drastically reduced. The Trump administration, I think unsurprisingly, has not appointed a special envoy for LGBTQI plus rights of their own. They've withdrawn from the UN Human Rights Council, which is an important body for assessing the human rights situation of various countries, including how they're treating LGBTQI plus people and communities. And, you know, the sort of general turn or affinity that the Trump administration seems to have for authoritarian leaders and systems is really kind of anathema to the kind of support for liberal democratic values, including minority protections or support for LGBTQI plus rights that we saw under the previous administration. So I think across the board, we're seeing the Trump administration make an about face in terms of how it's acting on the global stage and with regard to LGBTQI plus rights.
But the United States is not alone on the world stage. Other nations, perhaps allies, perhaps adversaries, may take America's place, exercising the soft power that once enabled the U.S. to lead with its heart, not just its muscle. I I'd like to thank Ari Shaw for sharing his insights for this program. Shaw is a senior fellow and director of international programs at the Williams Institute at the University of California, Los Angeles School of Law. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Sometimes I lose myself.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Michael Taylor Gray and Sarah Montague and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. Stephen Stills, Diana Ross with Ashford and Simpson and Control S performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Harry Richardson of Socorro, New Mexico, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on WOOL Bellows Falls, Vermont, Free Radio Santa Cruz, California, CKDU Halifax, Nova Scotia, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
Listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
Camp KBOO is in session. Sign up to support us during our summer membership